Hello, hello. We welcome you today to Love is Spoken Queer, Gospel Topics, LGBTQ plus voices. I'm Dustin Larson.
And I'm Renee Hernandez.
And happy Dia de los Muertos, Renee. I think when this posts, it'll be November 2nd. So that'll be towards the tail end of it. So how were you this past weekend? Any fun Halloween plans? Did you do anything for Dia de los Muertos? Because I know that you love that holiday. Let me hear your status update.
Yeah, for sure. So this week was basically full of school and work as per usual, but I did have a chance to be part of some fun events. Thursday, I had two events that were work-related. One was at Haunted House for my position with the grad school, and then El Centro had a Day of the Dead event on campus. Like, we basically were showing Coco. There was like Pan de Muertos, which is like sweet bread, along with conchas there for people to eat. And like they could paint rocks, and there was like painting skulls, some that like make marisoles, like fun activities that kind of correlated to the holiday to kind of introduce it to the campus and kind of invite anyone who wanted to take part of it. So that was really, really fun. Then I had the opportunity on Saturday to go to two Halloween parties, one for my church and then one for the church, and then one with some friends who were having Halloween parties. So I dressed up as a pirate, a Caribbean pirate. So that was really, really fun. I actually got a chance to wear, what is it called, eyeliner for the first time ever in my life. And I have to say that after trying to unsuccessfully to put it on my own eyes, I am very humbled by those individuals that know how to do it well and do it while a car is moving, because that is true talent. I was very impressed that because I stabbed my eyes once or twice, I had someone do it eventually. And then I kind of felt how they did it, and I did mine at the end, and I was able to kind of like get it right in like that eye part, right? It was scary, but I did it. It was great. And then today's Sunday when we're recording is the 31st. We are actually doing so I usually do this thing called like H-Cube, which is like Hocus Pocus, Hot Chocolate, and Halloween / Day of the Dead, right? And so I have friends coming over tonight at 7:30. And tonight I'm actually going to Diwali. This afternoon I'm going to Diwali, which is the Festival of Lights celebrated in India. And I'm not sure if it's celebrated in other countries. I've just usually always celebrated it with part of the Indian community. That's kind of been my day's celebration of like, you know, not just culture events that I enjoy, but also like Day of the Dead, which is more of a Mexican one, and Diwali, which obviously is more Indian. So it gives me an opportunity to be a part of a lot of different cultures. And I've been really excited. This coming weeks are going to be crazy. So I'm kind of glad I get like a little bit of downtime right now before the craziness of the next 3 weeks kind of kicks into gear. So that's my update for now.
What does HQ stand for? I get the H, which is Halloween, but what's the Q?
No, cube.
Oh, like cube.
H to the power of three. So Hocus Pocus, Halloween. Okay.
Hot chocolate. Makes sense. So I was like, are you starting your own kind of like Halloween queer style or something, that sort of thing? I was just like, oh, is it you're starting your own kind of like LGBT cube group there or whatever? Oh, but I hear cube now. So I heard cube. But anyways, I am taking it easy this Halloween weekend again. I was telling my friends that 2019, I was out of commission because I had my leg injury. 2020, the world shut down. And then 2021, I still am agoraphobic. I'm still like not ready to be around people. And if I am, I get drained real fast. So I'm going to keep it homebound this year again. I got a whole bunch of Cheryl's cookies. Are you aware of Cheryl's cookies? Oh, they're these delicious cookies where they're these soft sugar cookies with buttercream frosting. If you go to like Cheryl's.com or something like that, they're like gift basket cookies where you like send them to other people, and there's like 1-800 baskets, and then there's Sherry's berries or that sort of thing. So they're more giftables, but I got a coupon in the mail a couple weeks ago that got like $10 off an order. So I was like, I'll have 24. So I got 24 soft sugar cookies in the shape of pumpkins, ghosts, and this weird kind of like alien looking green thing or whatever, but they're really good. They're all soft sugar cookies, whatever. But they remind me of the sugar cookies that my mom would make when we were little. And my earliest memories of them is she'd make them around Halloween with the pumpkin cookie cutter. And then she'd make them around Valentine's Day, so the heart cookie cutter. So I love eating these because they taste exactly like hers and they look exactly like hers. So that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend. Is I haven't decided if I'm going to go kind of campy Halloween and watch like Disney stuff, or if I'm going to go spooky Halloween and watch like scary movies. So I'll decide at the end. But probably campy, because my anxiety is on high right now because I'm traveling for work on Tuesday to go to Austin. I'm just hoping everything goes well, because Mercury is out of retrograde, but my password for all of my work-related items expired, and I can't get to IT until tomorrow morning, which is Monday. And so I'm like, I wanted to kind of prep some stuff yesterday and prep some stuff today, but I don't have access to it because I can't log into anything. I can log into my computer, but not any of our servers and stuff. So I'm trying to keep my cool right now so that way I'm able to just get it up and running tomorrow morning, and then everything will be fine. But yeah, so I'll probably go campy because I don't want to get any more anxious than I actually am. But that's how I'm going to be celebrating this. And I also, while researching for some of the topics we're going to discuss this episode, I noticed that there's some Dia de los Muertos kind of pop-ups that are happening, like at Rockefeller Center. I guess they did all Dia de los Muertos. They have
Can I pause for you for a second just to help you? It's actually not called Dia de los Muertos. It's called Dia de Muertos.
Sorry. Well, thank you for doing that. So Dia de Muertos. There you go. I almost say it again. There's alebrijes. Is that what those animals are? What are they called?
I don't know. I mean, from Coco, I know that that's what they're called.
Okay. Yeah. So it's the spirit guide animals. So apparently they have a couple down at Rockefeller Center, and then they have a couple other kind of skeletons around there too. So if I get some time today, probably to just kind of calm my nerves, I'll be going down to Rockefeller Center and kind of seeing that. If I don't get to it, I'll go to it tomorrow before I have to fly out on Tuesday, because then it's taken down after Tuesday. But anyways, I really love this time of year because it reminds me of my family and my Mexican heritage and all those sort of things. And it just so happens to coincide with the topic that we're going to be discussing today. But before we get into that, Renee, what's something else that we can kind of do to express our love for our family, both here on Earth and through our pod sphere to the listeners out there, which I consider family?
It couldn't be a Haikaluluya. Who would do that for their family?
Yes, exactly. We are doing our Haikaluluya. And if you haven't guessed it yet, we are going to be discussing Doctrine and Covenants chapters 125 through 128 through the queer perspective of family, which I think is very fitting because of the day it aligns with. Like, we're going to be talking about baptisms for the dead, so our family members that have passed on, which aligns with Dia de Muertos, which is a lot of that sort of remembrance of those that have passed on sort of thing. So I think, and then also us as queer people, we kind of have a unique relationship with the idea of family. And so before we get into it, who would you like to go first? I think you went first last time. Do you want me to?
So why don't you do the honors this time then?
So here's my Haikaluluya on the topic of family. Family can be the one that has been given or the one that's found.
Aww. I love that. Sometimes, you know, you make your family, your chosen family. I feel like that's so applicable, especially to some individuals, you know, in the queer community who family can't handle who they are, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear yours.
Well, mine's definitely not as deep as yours, but it is something. Here we go. So my Haikaluluya from the perspective of family. Family a gift. Family a binding cord. Family always.
Oh, you used it three times. Are you trying to get bonus points for using the word three times in your Haikaluluya?
I figured like the key thing on this should be family. So I made family and everything.
Yeah, definitely. And that's relevant to our discussion today because, again, as we're talking about Doctrine and Covenants chapters 125 through 128, the first two chapters were basically the first one was Joseph Smith kind of telling. I'm forgetting what it is, but the first couple ones before we get into the actual baptisms for the dead was sort of laying the foundation for the ordinances that would be part of baptisms for the dead. And then one specifically to Brigham Young, where he's saying, you've done your work of traveling abroad for basically a majority of your marriage. Now it's time to go back and focus solely on your family. And then the last two chapters are Joseph Smith kind of getting out the revelations where he could, because he was also on the run trying to let the saints know about this new process of doing baptisms for the dead and how important it was, and also on the run. So rather than having full-blown revelations, he was writing letters to the saints. So that's kind of the gist of what these chapters are about. And that was my horrible summary of them, but I hope you guys go and you read them for yourselves. But Renee, before we get into our discussion, as a queer person of faith, when you first hear the word family, what first comes to mind?
Honestly, as soon as you said that, I was like, my family, like my blood relations. That's the first thing that comes to mind, but it's always very quickly followed by kind of like what your Haikululia was about, finding your own family, you know, the individuals you've grown so close to that you consider your extended family, if you will, but they're just as invaluable to you as the family you chose. So they're the individuals. So for me, family are the individuals that are there for you in the times of need, who show you love that is unconditional. And I feel like they just make you feel safe and whole. And it doesn't have to be, it's not always all the time either, because we're imperfect. So I like to throw that imperfection into the concept of family. So when I say that, it's just that the majority of the time, that is the feeling that's generated, if not always, you know, that's kind of what family means to me, I guess. And then if I like, I guess, and when I added to like the eternal perspective, I feel like families are forever. And when I added to the queer perspective, if that families can be formed of any makeup of individuals, it doesn't have to just be a mother and a father and children. It could be father, adopt children. For some groups, it's father, like polyamorous love and everything. So I feel like families can really be part of anything. You know what I mean?
Thank you for sharing that. And when you were describing what the family gives you, safety, comfort, unconditional love, that's basically what Christ-like love is supposed to be. So if you think about it, if we as members of the church and us as disciples of Christ are displaying Christ-like love, there should be no broken families anywhere, which isn't the case. But what comes to mind as a queer person of faith, when I think about family, first of all, the first thing I thought about was my family as well, and how I was blessed to have a family that's so close that we still to this day have almost like weekly FaceTime calls, where it's just for, it could be for random reasons, and we were on for like hours at a time. And so that's really fun. But we did have kind of like a growing pains period of time after me coming out. So we were always super, super close when we were little. And then when we became adults, we kind of went through our rebellious stages, or we did like the butting of heads, usually what siblings do. But then when I came out, there was kind of this rift of no one knowing exactly what to do, because this was still kind of early in the acceptance of LGBTQ members within the church. This was like early days. This was like Prop 8 days. So like I came out in 2007. So then shortly after was 2008. And for those of you that don't know what Proposition 8 is, it was a huge proposition to get marriage equality illegal again, or not legal, in the state of California, which had just passed marriage equality. And the church was unfortunately a huge advocate for passing Proposition 8. They put a lot of money and they put a lot of other things into it. And this is a touchy subject for a lot of members of the church, because they, you know how the church likes to kind of remember things in rose-colored glasses and not necessarily be like, oh, that was a mess up in a period of time, and not really own up to exactly how much hurt it caused, which is still to this day. But anyways, I don't want to get into that subject. But anyways, so that's kind of the period of time of when I came out, was around that time of the church's stance of they still saw it as something that was curable. They still saw it as something that, like, if you married a woman, if you were a man, you could fast and pray your way through it. And we know that that's not the case now. But anyways, after there was that period of time and I started to find harmony between my authentic self and my spiritual self, and I kind of showed my parents and my siblings that this was a way that I could still live my life and still be a full member of the church, then we kind of all put our guards down, because in the long run, that was really what my family wanted for me, was they wanted me to be happy. They wanted me to be accepted wherever I was. So I think a lot of their misunderstandings wasn't out of defiance of you can't live that way because God says no. It was their not being able to understand how that could be possible based on the current teachings of the church. And once they started to realize that a lot of the teachings that were coming over the pulpit and stuff were a little bit misguided through the bias of man, they realized that they needed to really look at the scriptures and the doctrine from a new set of eyes, because now they're directly affected by it through me. Like I said earlier, I can't even remember when I said this, I think it was earlier this year or maybe last year, is allies are an extension of the LGBTQ community because they are directly affected by it as well. If someone they love is affected, they're affected. So that's a way of them kind of coming to terms with how to kind of navigate the church. And now, rather than us as two parallel lines trying to figure out how we can love each other but still be in accordance with the church, we are now intersecting lines and actually one line following one journey on how we can both accept everyone for who they are and also find what reasons in the doctrine to support this and kind of undo the misguidings that had been placed before. So that's kind of my long-winded way of saying, as a queer person of faith, that's what I see or I hear when I first hear the word family. And I'm blessed to have a family that is still behind me, but I know that there's a lot of members out there, both in and outside of the church, that don't have that same blessing of being able to be close with their given family, meaning the family they were born into. And I think us as queer people, we have the privilege of finding people that do accept us. If our given family doesn't necessarily do that, we are able to find those. And RuPaul has said this, we have the opportunity to find our own families, to find those that treat us more like a family than those that we're blood related to. I think that's something really beautiful as a queer community that people outside of the queer community could really learn from, is in the long run, we are all sort of related. If we all think that we all descended from Adam and can find our lineage from Adam, we are technically all a part of the same family, so we should treat each other as such. And I'll get a little bit more into that as our discussion goes on. But Renee, is there anything in these readings that really jumped out at you that kind of sparked both your spiritual side of family and then your queer side of family, that kind of really something that you could relate to?
I think it wasn't like a specific verse that I can think of. Like, I mean, obviously there are, but like, I think in the way you asked me the question, I feel like I want to generalize and saying, like, I like these messages because they were very heavily focused on different aspects of family. Like you mentioned, the first, at least this is how I took it, and nobody has to take it the same way I did. One of the things that I've struggled with the concept of family was also the idea of home, how family is supposed to provide a home for you and stuff like that. And for some reason, I always struggled with that. I mean, I know the reasons, but too much to go into here, but I struggle with the concept of home. So when I read section 125, it made me think of a lot of that, because it talks about the creation of a city across from Nauvoo, right? So it's like the idea of creating homes for these individuals that are going to be arriving and letting them choose where they go. The next section after that is talking about, like you mentioned, Brigham Young and how his work as a missionary had ended. And now it's time to focus on your family, like be intentional, be there with your family. So I was like, okay. The first section talks about building a city, a home. And then the next one is talking about being very focused and family centric. The next part is talking about the importance of having a way to record things, like keep record of things, because we believe that what's written on earth, you know, will be written in heaven as well, kind of thing like that. And the last section of the reading talks about baptisms for the dead. For those that don't know, we do believe that even if our ancestors have passed away, we can still do ordinances for them, and they can choose to accept them or not in the afterlife. And I really love that whole journey of the sections that they chose, because it just highlights for me those different aspects of, as a queer individual, the search for a home was in big part because I felt different. I didn't feel like I belonged in my home. I felt like I didn't necessarily have the best relationship with my mom and dad. And a big part of that is because I wasn't sharing my whole self with them, right? And so it was hard to them to connect with me in a lot of ways. And I feel like it's kind of funny because the next thing just reminded me of like how there's a lot of entries that I have in my journal in respects to my journey. And just one of the biggest pieces that for me in my queer journey that always helped me stay strong is this idea that I had support from angels that were my ancestors, and they saw what I was doing. And I don't know, in big part, they were proud of me. I think when my grandpa passed away, I was worried. I'm like, oh man, what's he going to think now that he can see everything I'm doing? You know, at least that's how I visualized it. So I was like, oh, I better behave. Not that I did, but at the time. But like, it just, all of them just made me feel like, and this verse has just made me feel that love of like, family extends to so many different pieces. That's not just the physical beings that exist in our lives. And as queer individuals, sometimes looking at those holistic pieces is really helpful in our healing process, especially if we've been hurt, or helps us find like a sense of belonging sometimes too, or hopefully it does. I don't want to come from a place of privilege where, you know, I am at my, I still talk to my family and stuff like that and such. But so that's kind of like what it prompted for me. It was just all these different thoughts of like how family is in the afterlife now. And also like, you know, it's wherever your home currently is. So like for me, a big chunk of my family is the people I have here in Virginia, you know, even if we're not related.
Yes, thank you for sharing that, because a lot of thoughts came up while you were speaking, both that kind of connect my thoughts that I had before and the new thoughts that I had. But thank you for sharing like the thoughts of building a home and building a place that all should be able to feel accepted and welcome and loved. Because if you think about it, all of the families out there, and I don't mean to generalize at all because I've never been a part of this experience, but it's just from what I've heard, I feel like the main reason why certain families become broken when one of their loved ones comes out is because they feel like, one, they're going against the doctrines of the church, which is not necessarily true. But the two, another main factor that I've heard is they become worried that the ceiling that they had to one another is now broken, because if this individual chooses a different path that is not seen as the quote unquote celestial path, they won't be able to live with each other in the next life. So they feel like that one individual has broken the ceiling for the rest of the family, because they want to all be together forever after. But that one individual who chose to live their authentic self is ruining it for the rest of the people, which is not necessarily true. So people out there that are under that belief that they, in order to sanctify their ceiling, they have to kick out that member that is ruining for everyone else, is actually a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you are then going against the commandments of Christ to love one another, especially your family. So then you won't even get that ceiling power too, because you are blaming it on someone else when in turn you are fulfilling it for yourself by not showing Christ-like love, if that makes sense. And one of the things that kind of made me think of that is in Doctrine and Covenants 126, verse 3, and this is specifically to Brigham Young. Basically, he's been relieved of his traveling duty, and it says, "I therefore command you to send my word abroad," and this is the one I want to focus on right here, "and take especial care of your family from this time, henceforth, and forever. Amen." And I said, as a queer person of faith, it is my sacred duty to stand as an example of what Christ's love truly is. This means loving and caring for both my given family and my chosen family, even in times of difficulty, and encouraging them to do the same. So I think if we really look at it, and I know it's a lot less simple than what I'm saying, but it should be this simple, is we need to come together as a family in times of difficulty, both chosen or given, and really analyze what the difficulties or the rifts are. And we need to get to the source of that and the cause of that and see, can we fix this by just remembering to go back to Christ-like love? And I think a lot of times that's what it is. If it's jealousy, if it's anger, if it's offense, if that sort of thing, if we just go back to remembering to love each other as we are supposed to love ourselves, and then to love each other as we're supposed to love God, that could really put to bed a lot of these differences. And again, I'm saying it's not that simple, but if we are true disciples of Christ, if you go back to what his true words are, is loving one another, that should put a lot of things to rest. And one of the reasons why I'm saying this too is from the manual, they have like a little quote from Sister Bonnie L. Oscarson, I don't know why I pronounced it wrong. So Sister Bonnie L. Oscarson, former Young Women General President, and she says this, she says, "Remember that some of the greatest needs may be those right in front of you. Begin your service in your own homes and within your own families. These are the relationships that can be eternal. Even if, and maybe especially if, your family situation is less than perfect, you can find ways to serve, lift, and strengthen. Begin where you are, love them as they are, and prepare for the family you want to have in the future." And I think that's a really great reminder that we're supposed to love our families through thick and thin, through hard times and good times. Make sure each one of us are cared for. We have shelter. We're happy. We're well taken care of. Like that sort of thing. We start to realize that a lot of our beliefs do intertwine. And then we can kind of have less judgmental eyes when we start looking at our differences and like city living versus country living, like football versus like broad, like those little things that shouldn't deter us from loving one another will be less sort of factored into the overall scheme of things. So like if there's already sort of rifts in your family, find a way to meet common ground first. And this you could bring outside of your family as well. But then there's certain topics that it's not an agree to disagree sort of thing. Like, yeah, definitely like how certain individuals are being treated. But if you do the exercises and you go through the motions of what is true Christ-like love, the differences or the not seeing eye to eye on like those sort of large scale things might not be there again once you return to Christ saying love everyone.
Instead of ignoring differences is this idea of trying to put yourself in those differences so you can better understand the person. So you're coming more from a place of empathy and not a place of colorblindness almost. That's an ableist statement. So I should say color divergence, maybe. I definitely think that there's, especially bringing it back to Sister Bonnie L. Arkansas's statement, right? I do love that very, very much. I think a lot of times, especially politics, that we're very vocal on the external, the things that affects others, individuals, and we forget that it's very important to start in our own home, especially when we're talking about queer spirituality. I think if we really are opening our hearts up to be Christ-like, like you said, it does provide a better place of growth, healing, and establishing a lot of the patterns that you were suggesting in regards to tabling differences and focusing on similarities, so that growth can really take place for certain groups. And I definitely agree that, especially as a queer individual, that kind of an environment really does create a more beautiful setting for in the future when you start bringing in things that aren't necessarily in your family, for a lot of growth to take place there too.
Yes, thank you for sharing that, because you kind of calling me out sort of, and I'm glad you did, because it's having me rethink what I just said. And yes, what I was saying was, my privilege was starting to show a little bit too, because you can't, it's not as easy to kind of table certain things going forward. And I think one way to kind of practice what I preach sort of thing is also, is one way that you can, as a family, try to get on the same page for certain differences that are really big, is to research those differences together, learn about different cultures. Like, why do you have differences between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter sort of thing? Like, when you're having that conversation, research it together, like see why All Lives Matter can be offensive to people that believe in Black Lives Matter, like that sort of thing, or the defund the police versus the thin blue line, like that sort of thing. Like, these are the huge, huge kind of differences that are coming to mind right now. And a lot of the times they are wanting the same things. It's just they're speaking language that the other doesn't understand. And if they research it a little bit further, they'll realize, oh, we're speaking the same language. We're actually kind of going for the same thing. So let's help each other get to that finish line, because we're all kind of going, we don't want to, it's a lot of stuff. Like, we do care about all lives, but at the same time, all lives can't matter unless everyone is brought to the same page. Like, that's the same thing that I kind of talk about with the labels. Like, it would be fine and dandy if all labels were seen as children of God, but that's not the case right now. Like, we need to make sure that the queer labels and the people of color labels are magnified to the point where they are seen the same. And so that's kind of what we can do as well. Another verse that kind of is relating to what I'm saying right now is in Doctrine and Covenants chapters 127, verse 12. It says, "Behold, my prayer to God is that you all may be saved." And I want to focus mostly on that. But it goes on to say, "And I subscribe myself, your servant in the Lord, prophet and seer of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." But I want to go back and focus to that first part where it says, "Behold, my prayer to God is that you all may be saved." And I said, as a queer person of faith, it is my sacred duty to be a reminder that we are all part of the same sacred family, no matter the differences in our journeys. Also, it should be every member's desire that all may be saved. So I think, again, if you have those differences between political parties or all this sort of thing, I don't know, whatever the differences are in your family, you need to remind yourself that we are all part of one family. And the ultimate goal is for all of us to make it back to him. Christ said that that's what he hoped to do. But again, he wanted to give us agency. And so that might not exactly happen. But again, that is the end goal. And we should all do our best to work towards that without kind of trampling on each other's agency. The research that I was kind of thinking of that is relating to our topic today in regards to like kind of family, and I know we're not going to get too into like the baptism for the dead. We do know it's a sacred covenant, but I kind of want to go on a different tangent and the reason for the baptisms for the dead, because I think us as a church, we really believe in families are forever. And even if those family members have passed on, we can still find ways to kind of connect us together. And I've heard growing up that this is something that is really relatable to kind of the Hispanic or the Latinx community as well, is they have these sort of beliefs that when their ancestors die, they aren't just in the ground and that's it. Like, they believe in an afterlife and they believe in being able to communicate and continue to have relationships with their family members that have passed on, which is expressed in the Dia de Muertos, especially like all these different aspects of remembering your family members that have passed on, having ofrendas, doing all these sort of activities that remind you of your ancestors and to never forget. And I think that's one reason that a lot of Hispanic or Latinx people are drawn to the teachings of the church when they hear that we believe that families can be together forever. So I did kind of like a little bit more research because I know Dia de Muertos is now kind of coming out of kind of an indigenous holiday and into the mainstream. And whenever that happens, there's always the risk of appropriating certain cultures and motifs and all these things and capitalizing on those things. And so I've been seeing kind of words come up in the Hispanic Latinx community where they're so happy that it's becoming this mainstream thing, but at the same time, they are very cautious of it being disrespected. I think one of the ways that we can kind of avoid that is to do our research. And so as I was doing some research, I found some really great sort of sources that kind of bring back to focus the reason for Dia de Muertos and the reason behind it. And a lot of the overlaps it has with us as members of the church and our beliefs. But Renee, I know this is one of your favorite kind of holidays to kind of celebrate. What about Dia de Muertos really draws you to it?
So I've always been of a person that, when my grandpa passed away, I was very emotional, like after a minute of processing everything. I've always found so much beauty in the idea of our families being together forever and the connectivity of seeing death as not a sad thing, but a celebratory thing, not in the sense of like go out and take your life or anything like that. You know what I mean? But this idea of, I love the vibrancy that comes in the Day of the Dead. They celebrate like the first day is always remember the children. The second day is remember the adults. And there's all this food, all this color, all this tradition, the altars, all this different meaning. And I found a lot of beauty in that. I think it's beautiful. Aside from the delicious food, the energy, the happiness, that's a lot of the stuff that I like about it. I think it's one of the same reasons that I actually joined the church. When I was Catholic, one of the things I didn't like was the representation of Jesus Christ always on the cross. Like that was our main symbol. And I like that the church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, focus more on the resurrection, the part of like, you know, his glorified state. And for me, Day of the Dead does that. Instead of focusing just on the sad aspect of loss, they focus on the beauty of what comes after and how you can connect to the after with your family still in mind and how that can be done with beauty and color, not always just with tears. You know what I mean? It can be a time of sharing and enjoying the company of those living with those that have passed. And so I feel like that is beautiful. And I think it really links up really well with our beliefs on the eternities and believing. A friend of mine told me, maybe it was you, no, maybe I was talking to someone else. They said, maybe the Mexicans have it right. Like, you know, Mexico has it right in the sense of like, they have a close relation to how we believe the eternities are, you know, you're always connected to your ancestors no matter what. And so I thought that was kind of fun and a beautiful thought. But that's why I love it. And I think I love sharing with others, even though it's not my culture. Mine's a little bit different. I love that I share a part of another culture with friends.
Yes, thank you. And I think it's really important for people of other cultures to join in on the celebration of things, but at the same time, research certain things so that way you don't accidentally appropriate it. And I think when you research it and you do it from like a very loving and open mind, you can kind of see the certain things that you'd be like, ooh, that feels really sacred. I'm not going to do that. And then you can have an understanding for the people. Like I was reading this article, which I'll post, which was on NPR, of why the marigolds are such a significant portion of Dia de Muertos. And it's because their fragrance and their bright hues are supposed to help guide your ancestors from the afterlife to the ofrendas to the other side. And the individual in this article was saying that's a beautiful way that everyone can participate in this because flowers are gorgeous. They can't sort of disrespect in any way. It's your way of showing like, yes, I want to participate in this, but not really offending anything, as opposed to like painting your face as like a skull or dressing up in sort of the Katrina kind of way of dressing. Like that could be seen as offensive if you're not necessarily part of that culture. So I think research is a huge way of understanding a different sort of culture. Talking to someone from that culture is a really great place to kind of find understanding of that culture. So that way you don't offend someone when you're trying to show respect to a culture. Because I'm not saying you shouldn't be completely hands-off, be like, oh, this isn't my culture. I want nothing to do with it because I'm afraid of offending. research it and you can start to see what things are offensive and what things aren't offensive. And if you are in doubt, just ask someone from that culture and be like, would this be offensive if I participate in this sort of thing? And they'll have a better understanding of how sacred it is to them and be like, yeah, you probably shouldn't go there. In my research for this, I actually found a really cute video. It was released this year from Doritos, Mexico, which is a very surprising place to find a video of this significance or of this reverence to all the aspects that kind of make me. And it's funny because all I did was what I wanted to do is I wanted to go back and research some more things about Dia de Muertos. And it was like one of the last videos as I was scrolling through that I found it and I saw it and I thought it was so cute. And so I sent it to Renee because it has so much significance with what we're talking about today. Renee, do you want to describe this video that I sent to you for the listeners out there?
I'd love to. So there's this cute little family, a mom. This is me creating a kind of semi-heteronormative image of what I saw, but it looked like it was a father, a mother, and a daughter, and a grandmother. So it looked like a family visiting the grandmother's brother's grave in Mexico to celebrate Day of the Dead. So they brought him some of his favorite snacks to the gravesite. And when she's dropping off the site, she's, you know, remembering her brother. And in that moment, her brother appears. Kind of like, think if you've seen Coco, think of the spirit vibe. He's there and he's talking to his sister. And he takes off his hat. And as he does so, another individual, ancestor, maybe not theirs, but, you know, another spirit, she's behind him, steps to the side, and the brother, the spirit brother, nervously says, "This is basically my partner," and they hold hands, and it's another man ghost. So, I mean, I'm guessing they identify as two men, and they held hands, and you hear like a gasp, but it's one of excitement. And Julian, he's like, "Oh, it's so happy that I always thought you might end up alone, and you didn't." And it was celebratory, and it wraps up with them hugging and basically the quote of, "It's never too late. Even in the afterlife, you can find someone you love." And I thought it was so adorable and cute. The comments are kind of funny. It's like, how is this a Doritos commercial? I'm like, I don't care if it's a Dorito commercial. It's beautiful. Let it be. And you said it was released in Mexico. Is that what you said? Or it's just done by Doritos Mexico? I'm not sure if I followed.
I think it was released in Mexico by Doritos Mexico. Because for those out there, there's different marketing plans for all the different regions. Like, this usually happens with all these different corporations. Sometimes there's a global where everyone follows. And then sometimes there's regional where they kind of do their own thing. And so I think this is what happened with Doritos Mexico. So the Doritos company, the regional version of it, which is Doritos Mexico, they put this out for Dia de Muertos. But also to show that their support for the LGBTQ community isn't only limited towards June. They're saying this is an ongoing yearly thing, like all year, every year sort of thing. We want to continue to show our support for the LGBTQ community. And one way they were able to do this is to show that their little tagline, it says, "It's never too late to be who you are." And Renee, you got it as he found love after death. I saw it as this was him finally expressing himself to his family after death. Like, I think I saw it as they were partners in life. They just kind of kept it secret. And then finally, death kind of gave them the liberation to be themselves. And he was kind of like, "Well, I couldn't do it in life. Here's my chance to do it in death." And so it's kind of showing that there's no wrong time, or it's never too late to be who you truly are. And so
I think that's, I have to rewatch it and see if I get that too. I like it.
Because they didn't recognize him. The family didn't recognize who Mario was, but that doesn't mean that he wasn't around. Like, he probably was like, we don't know what their relationship was, but we do know that their relationship was close. It was his partner, and they were able to then be together fully without any judgment. But yeah, so I thought it was like a really cute video, and it kind of brought all of our thoughts together on this, because it talks about like our ancestors as they pass on, which is in this chapters, which is why it's really important to do baptisms for the dead. It talks about Dia de Muertos, which is my heritage, and then one of your favorite heritage or one of your favorite cultural holidays that you like to kind of participate in. And just reminding us that it's never too late to accept someone if you go back to being Christ-like love. It's in Spanish, just to preface it for you all that are going to watch it and thinking it's in thinking it's in English, but it's all in Spanish. So I'll post the article and the video, because the article kind of breaks it down in Spanish, breaks it down in English, what's kind of happening. And I want to add to that too. It's never too late to go back to family, whether it's your chosen or whether it's your given. You can still go back to family and try to reconnect and try to fix things if you remember to go back to a Christ-like love. And again, I'm saying it's not that easy for some people. Like, there's some people where their hearts need to be really, really, really softened, and only time can do that. But remember out there that in the case that your given family isn't able to show you Christ-like love, us as a queer community, we have the blessing to then go on to our chosen family who actually love us as Christ does. And again, I know this is just sunshine and rainbows. When we aren't able to find it in either, we can always turn to God and turn to Christ and find that love. But again, in times of trouble or in times of sorrow, try to find those individuals that really understand you for you, that can give you the unconditional love that you're searching for, which should come from your given family, but sometimes you need to find it from your chosen family. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, because family is family. As long as you see them that way, they don't need to share the same blood, but it's always nice if they do. But if they don't, that doesn't make them any less family. Renee, do you have any sort of closing thoughts before we kind of end our discussion?
A lot of the advice and a lot of the things that we've learned today in regards to family are assuming that you're in a place where you yourself feel like mentally you're healthy and you can handle it. It is a journey depending on what you have to figure out with your family. So make sure you're ready. And sometimes it doesn't mean you'll be perfectly ready, but you'll be ready enough. And like Dustin said, just go for it. It's never too late. So I'm definitely backing up that little video that we saw that hopefully you'll see for the Day of the Dead.
And I think with that, it's time to take a short break. And welcome back from the break. You're listening to Love is Spoken Queer. And Renee and I have just finished discussing Doctrine and Covenants 125 through 128 through the queer perspective of family. And I know family is a very complex topic when it comes to queer individuals and queer people of faith. And I hope we didn't make it seem like it's really easy to fix sort of rifts in your family. But we want to kind of take it from a place of hope, because I know deep down, everybody wants to be close with their bloodline and with their given family, because that's who you grew up with. That's who you want to be around. But if that, again, if that's not the case, there's no shame in finding family elsewhere. And end of the story, or moral of the story, is we need support from one another in order to make it through this life. We don't need to go through it alone. And that's what I hope you really take away from this, is find family wherever you're able to in order to provide you that support. And so I guess, Renee, based on our discussion today, what do you feel called to do?
I think I'd love to Sister Bonnie's talk about focusing my own family. I feel like there's work that I want to do with my own family, because I feel like when I eventually start building my own, I want to have my house in order, if you will, in order to be able to really be myself and be supportive to whatever family I start to build. So that's what popped into my head. I've been thinking about it prior to this, but this just reaffirmed it in my own noggin. How about yourself, Dustin?
I feel called to gain a closer connection with my Mexican heritage, because I've been researching it ever since I was a little kid. I've known what Dia de Muertos was. I knew what Bread of the Dead. I knew what the little dances that you do as like a skeleton old person. Like, I know all these sort of cultural customs that go along with it, but I've never really put it into practice. And that's something that I want to do. So I may be a little late to the game this go around, and I don't feel very open to going out into public and doing all these sort of things. But I really want to continue researching it, continue learning about my ancestors. So that way, when this time rolls around next year, I can put it into play. Like, I can try an ofrenda, or I can buy some marigolds, or I can make Bread of the Dead, which is funny. The last time I made Bread of the Dead was in middle school. And it was the heaviest loaf of bread you ever did feel, which means I did something wrong, but it tasted so good. And I made it for the class for extra credit. But when I handed it over to my teacher to kind of feel, she's like, this should not be this heavy. I don't think I can have you serve this to the class, but I'll still give you extra credit for it.
So basically, it's about a fruit cake, the whole fruit cake joke.
Yeah, but it just was like heavy. And I don't know what I did. It tasted amazing. It was the sweet bread. It was so good, but it just was like a rock. And so maybe I'll try that again next year, but that's what I feel called to do.
That's awesome.
And listeners out there, if you'd like to contribute your thoughts on family, or if you're celebrating Dia de Muertos and what you did, or if there's other cultural holidays around family that you think we should research or you want to tell us about, feel free to send them in to lovespokenqueer@gmail.com, or you can send us a direct message on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And Renee, before we leave our listeners, is there anything you'd like to leave with them to take with them throughout the rest of their week?
Just same as always, we love you and we hope you're having a wonderful time and embrace those differences. You know, that's what makes us beautiful. And remember that you know yourself best and your situation best. And so, yeah, do it.
And listeners, with that, we'd like to thank you for listening and remember to always be true to you.
And love one another.
Until next time, bye.
Ciao.
You've just listened to another episode of Love is Spoken Queer. If you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to send us an email at our Gmail account, which is lovespokenqueer@gmail.com, or send us a direct message on our social channels. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you really love our episodes and our show, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That is the fastest way for us to share our words with everyone out there. So again, thank you for listening. Everybody.